Police are doing enough to resolve the cases of an estimated 600 murdered or missing Aboriginal women. Grand Chief David Harper represents Manitoba's Northern First Nations communities. Harper says many countries have been urging Canada to address the living conditions of Aboriginal people.
We've been trying, banging on the doors of Parliament Hill, but here we are today at this day and age. We need other countries to speak on our behalf.
The groups include the UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, members of the UN Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, and the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. In Ottawa, the Canadian government says it stands by its record on human rights and has nothing to hide. But Ottawa has not had warm relations with the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food. He scolded Canada last year over inequality and access to food, saying inequality is getting worse and that 800,000 households do not get the healthy food they need. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Mescalero Apache tribe in New Mexico says it's looking to expand its economy by mining rare earth elements. KUNM's Tristan Autone reports the elements are in demand for use in high-tech and green industries.
For decades, China has controlled up to 97% of the world's rare earth supply, and in the last 3 years have cut exports of those elements by over 70%. Without rare earths, a lot of technology you rely on every day doesn't work. For instance, cell phones, computer hard drives, radar systems, lasers, and hybrid vehicle batteries. That's where the Mescalero Apache come in. Since China's cutback on rare earth exports, entities in Australia, Canada, and the U.S. have been searching for more of the stuff. And in the northeastern portion of the Mescalero Reservation, two key elements are known to exist. Before mining can get started, the Mescalero Apache have to complete feasibility studies, explore how much of the two elements can be successfully mined, and get about 2,500 tribal members to vote yes or no on the project, which could include mining Pajarito Mountain, a site considered sacred by the tribe. The current timeline? Around 8 years to complete studies and get the project up for a vote. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell appeared before the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs Wednesday. Jewell has held the position for about a month. She told the committee she met with tribal leaders during the first week on the job. Jewell worked with tribes in Alaska and the Pacific Northwest during her banking days. Some of her priorities include education, climate change, and energy development. Jewell says to address tribal issues, it takes cooperation between tribes, her department, and Congress.
The meetings that I've had with tribal leaders have been enormously powerful and helpful in understanding the issues they face. And tribal consultation will be an important part of the role that I play in carrying out the responsibilities that are entrusted to me.
Senators further questioned Jewell on her goals for the department, which is charged with upholding the federal government's trust obligation to tribes.
I met Ulrita down by the graveyard yesterday, and she told me that she would love me all of the day.
Rita by Vincent Craig. Today we remember the late Navajo singer, songwriter, and comedian who passed away this week in 2010 after battling cancer. He's best known for his humorous songs on reservation life. Craig was the creator of the Mutton Man comic strip. He also appeared in movies like Turquoise Rose. His family's planning to make his work more available online. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
I went inside and took an old big hunk candy bar, stuck it in my pocket.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And that was...
He wrote a poem called...
National Native News. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Shona Strasser, and this is Juno Afternoon. And we are very lucky today to be talking to Booker T. Jones. Hi, Mr. Jones. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Shona.
Great. So are you talking to us today via your home in California?
No, my home is now in the state of Nevada.
Oh, great. Great. So we're really, really, it's an honor to talk with you today, and we're really excited to have you come up here and close the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. It's one of the best festivals that we do here in Juneau, and we're really excited to have you up here. And I'm wondering, is this, you're on tour all summer long, it looks like. I took a look at your website, and you're a very busy man. And is this in support of your 10th album, Sound the Alarm?
Yes, it is.
Great. Can you tell me a little bit about that album? This is your 10th album, your 10th studio album. That's is it solely your? How did it come about?
It represents my return to Stax Records, which was the first company that I worked for when I was maybe 15, 16 years old in Memphis, Tennessee, which was just about two blocks from my house. So the company has moved from Memphis, Tennessee to Los Angeles and been repurchased. And they have asked me to rejoin, and I did. And I made a new album, which is very reminiscent of Stax music that I made in the 60s. However, it's completely new.
Oh, wow, that's great. So I have a question about how do you, you know, you have such a, I mean, you're a legend in this business, and how do you, you know, keep your music both sounding, you know, the legendary sound that you actually have, as well as, you know, keeping it modern and for contemporary ears? How does that, how do you play off on that? How does that work?
Well, I have a discipline that I started maybe about 50 years ago of just practicing every day. Every day I do the same scales that I did when I was 12 or 13 years old.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but I do study, I have studied the new digital music, and I keep up with contemporary artists, and I just try to enjoy the old as well as the new.
Right, right. So who are some of your favorite new artists?
Well, the best new artists that are my favorites happen to be appearing on my new album. Gary Clark Jr. is a good example of that. He's a player who comes from Austin, Texas,
mm-hmm.
who was raised in an area that I hung out with there in Austin many years in the late 70s and 80s. And he's a blues player.
Oh, great.
And, but you wouldn't be able to tell his music very much from someone I played with in the early 60s, like Albert King or maybe B.B. King,
mm-hmm.
except that he has hip-hop influences as well as blues influences. That's an example. Another example is a fellow named Maya Hawthorne
mm-hmm.
that I met up in New York State when I was visiting Daryl Hall. And he is a young blue-eyed soul singer that his sound is very similar to that was happening with Hall & Oates in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But we're making completely new music, I'm just excited about it.
Yeah, that's really exciting. So who's coming up with you? What's the band you're bringing up here to Juneau?
This band is a very special group of musicians, all virtuoso players, that I've been working with now for about 6, 7, 8 years. The guitarist is Vernon Ice Black, someone that I was seeking after for many years, who played with Mariah Carey,
mm-hmm.
and he's just an excellent player. He's just very inspirational. And he was playing with Frankie Beverly and Maze when I first discovered him. And the drummer is someone who was born in my hometown of Memphis. He's younger, but he has that Memphis influence and rhythm, in his rhythm, rather. And his name is Darian Gray, and you might recall my original drummer, Al Jackson, when you hear him play. And Al is someone who played with Al Green and Willie Mitchell and Otis Redding and just many, many, many people.
Wow.
So we're gonna have that groove. And the bass player is another virtuoso, Melvin Brannon,
mm-hmm.
who's from Ventura, California, in the L.A. area. And together we just have a really great time doing new and old stuff.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So have you been up to Alaska before? Has your band been up to Alaska before?
Yes, we have been. We have been there before. About 2 years ago, I think.
Oh, great. Okay. So you've won Grammys. You've been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You've won the Grammys Lifetime Achievement Award, the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Americana Music Association. You know, you've in, I guess it was 2000, recently, the Road to Road from Memphis won the Best Pop Instrumental Album for a Grammy. And then I also, of course, I'm just fascinated also by this White House, the performance of the White House, Memphis Soul. And I'm wondering, do you ever get nervous anymore? Does the White House make you nervous?
Well, I get nervous before I perform. You know, I want each performance to be special for the people that are there. I do, but I relax a little bit once the music starts and once I get on stage. But yeah, I do have the jitters before we go on.
And how was the how was it with working with the White House, and who all did you perform with? It was quite a crew there.
It was great. It was just wonderful. You know, it was a huge undertaking because they brought all the production people from Los Angeles. So we had big cables coming from the White House lawn into the East Room, and the whole electronic thing. You know, because it's just a house. You know, it's not set up for a TV show.
Right.
but the president himself made everybody feel comfortable. He came down and hung out with us during the rehearsals and that sort of thing. And it's his home, and he can relax there. He doesn't have Secret Service people around and that sort of thing. And so the actual show ended up being a very informal, relaxed, fun time.
Oh, that's great. And I saw online that you can still check that out on PBS here and there, you know, that it pops up. It's something great to check out there. So what kind of things can Juno audiences be looking forward to on your performance Saturday?
Well, I have a wide range of music to choose from.
Right.
When I'm on stage. And I like to share with the audiences my favorites, from my most recent favorites, and favorites that I've generally been involved in, either songs that I had a part in writing or a part of creating the original version of the songs. So I might, you know, perform a part of a Bob Dylan song or a Leon Russell song, most certainly Booker T and the MGs music.
Of course.
Which
yeah.
is still my favorite, Green Onions, Hang 'em High, Time is Tight, Hip Hop, those songs
mm-hmm.
I love to play.
Great.
But so many of the people that I grew up with, my contemporaries in Memphis, made music that's just, I love. And so I like to do Wilson Pickett and Eddie Floyd and Al Green. Those people, I love to do their music. But then there's, you know, a lot of contemporary music that I've learned that I like to bring to the stage also.
Oh, that's great. We're really looking forward to it. And I just had one final question for you. I read a 2012 commencement speech that you gave at your alma mater, Indiana University. And I was just really taken by this quote, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about it. It was, if you want to be comfortable at the top, you need to be familiar with the bottom. And I'm just wondering if you could kind of share with us how that philosophy kind of plays into your music and into your creation.
Yeah, my paradigm for success has to do a lot with the things that my music teacher taught me, and especially in the professional world. I feel that the best leaders really do know what's going on with the people that they're leading. You know, if you think of a general in the army, you know, he really needs to know what the private is feeling and what the sergeant is feeling. If you have a conductor, you know, he really needs to know where the oboe player is having trouble. This type of thing, you know, coaches. I think it applies to a lot of different situations, and that's what I was talking about, knowing what's happening at the bottom.
Right, right. And do you see that kind of, does it spill over into how you create music and, you know, how you work musically?
It does. I try to pay attention to every part of the music that I can. You know, I started as a bass player. I got my first job there, and I'm not a drummer, but I try to understand what the drummer does, and I play a little bit of guitar. And I try to spend some time with all the instruments, from oboe to bass violin to trombone. I got my degree on trombone. So if I'm standing in front of the orchestra, you know, I do know a little bit about what each person is going through when they try to deliver.
Right. Yeah, that does make a huge difference, right? Well, Booker T. Jones, Mr. Jones, thank you so much. We're really looking forward to your grand finale. It's the grand finale of the Juno Jazz and Classics here in Juno. We're really looking forward to your performance. And, yeah, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. And, yeah, I can't wait to see it.
Well, thanks, Shauna. Thanks for calling, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. And have a safe travels up here, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, we will.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye. And that's a little bit of Booker T coming here this Saturday night. Oh, so it's so amazing to talk to him on the phone, and I hope you get a chance to pick up some tickets for that this Saturday night. And following Saturday night, well, it's a busy weekend, folks, you can go ahead and check out on Sunday the Maritime Festival. And here in the studio with me, I have Alicia Chilton and Jesse Post. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Shona.
Yeah, of course. So can you give me a brief run, well, you know, a rundown of what actually, she's looking at me like brief, whatever, a rundown of what's actually going on this, it's this Sunday.
Yes, it's this Sunday, May 19th, at Marine Park, the whole plaza area right there from 11 to 5 p.m.
Great. So what, Alicia, can you give us a little bit of rundown of actually what are the highlights of this year's festival?
Well, I'm with the One People Canoe Society, and we're going to be kicking off the festival at 11 a.m. with a coming ashore short ceremony. We've got two canoes that will be paddling over from Harris Harbor.
Okay.
And we'll kick off the ceremony with a little welcoming coming ashore, and looking forward to everyone coming out and joining us for a paddle throughout the day. I know there's some great other events planned here for this Sunday, and I'm going to let Jesse talk about a few of those.
Great.
Yeah, well, the reason that JDC does this is because we want to highlight the importance of the Juno just has a really rich maritime history, culture, and commerce. This is such a coastal community. So we have things lined up like we have vessel tours. We have a lot of fishing vessels and tugboats. They'll be lined up at the Seadrome Dock. We'll have a boat show at the Seadrome Dock or parking lot in right in front of the Gold Belt Hotels for people to show off their boats. And we also have many food contests that have to do with we have a smoked salmon dip marinade contest. New this year, we have Sea Alaska or who is it? It's Sea. I always forget this. Sea Southeast Alaska Fish Habitat Partnership and Southeast Beer Week are sponsoring a food and beer on salmon and beer on the pier contest for restaurants to enter in. We've got our fillet contest. which is sponsored by ASME. We've got Taku Smokeries and Alaska Glacier Seafoods. They bring in the pros. They show us how to fillet fish all day. We've got the grill fired up, so when they're filleting all day, we've got free some little bites for people to sample some salmon and rockfish. We also have, we've got a rain gear roundup, so there's drop-off. Saga is helping us organize that, and it's for lightly used kids' rain gear, so we'll have some rain gear. We realize that's a challenge for kids to get out into the Juneau weather if they don't have the right gear, so Saga's helping us organize that. We have sailboat rides by seas, lots of live music and entertainment up on stage, and also new this year, we've added in a fish tote race, which will be held. We need contestants for a fish tote race.
So what does actually a fish tote race entail?
Well, I actually tested this out last week with Taku Smokery employees, and it will be held at the dock by Taku Smokeries, and it's basically you get into a fish tote, an empty fish tote, and with two teams of two, and you paddle a certain distance and back and forth, and the fastest people to paddle the course win. So.
Will you be doing that in the channel?
It's on the the inner part of the dock.
The inner part of the
dock,
so okay.
It's a little mellower there. Yeah.
Yes. You know, I have to say that I watch. They have a little video clip on the Juneau Maritime Festival Facebook page, and if you haven't seen it yet, you've got to go watch it. It's absolutely fantastic. I think I'll be entering this.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love
I'm interested. It looks like a lot of fun.
I love that.
I'll jump between the canoe and the fish totes.
Yeah. So, Alicia Chilton, how did the One Canoe Society get involved with Maritime Festival? Is this the first year?
This is our fourth year that we've been with JEDC.
Oh, great.
And so we've been happy to work with all the staff and volunteers and community members. I also work for True North Federal Credit Union, and they've been absolutely a great employer to work for as they allow me to volunteer to be on the committees. That it takes a lot of work to pull off the Juneau Maritime Festival, and so I've been really lucky to be able to really be a part of the planning committee and help pull all these things together, and it's exciting to have a lot of new things on the agenda for this Sunday.
That's fabulous. So you said people can actually come in the canoes. Is that true?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow.
We've got our canoes are 32 feet, and we can seat 14 paddlers, and then there's, 12 paddlers and one skipper. But we also have room in between the paddlers, so if someone just wants to go for a ride, they're more than welcome to do that as well. We'll be there throughout the festival, throughout the whole afternoon, and feel free to come by and see us at the top of the dock, and we'll see how many people we can get in and take a short little paddle just out around the bay here.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a really great opportunity for Juneauites. So I haven't looked at the cruise schedule. What's the cruise ship schedule on Sunday? Is there?
It's a light cruise ship day, and we purposely schedule the festival for on a light cruise ship day. I think after May, the cruise ship schedule gets pretty hectic. So there's not many boats. There's, I think, maybe one or two boats in.
Great.
On Sunday, because this really is a community event. We want locals to come down and experience downtown and support local businesses and organizations that will be at the festival, and that's kind of the reasoning behind that.
Great. So who are other, this is mostly sponsored by JEDC, is that correct? And then who are some of the other major sponsors of this event as far as community members being involved?
Yeah, we'd really like to give a big thank you to some of our premier sponsors. Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute has been instrumental. Alaska Marine Lines, Sea Alaska, and Hani, Marine Exchange, Alaska Glacier Seafood, and Taku Smokeries have been our top sponsors. But we also have a great planning committee along with Alicia. And we have Gold Belt, and we have quite a large planning committee that has been has really helped involve as many community members as we can. Like we said, we just try to engage the whole community.
Yeah. So is there a schedule online somewhere that people can check out, or is there a printed schedule somewhere?
Yeah. At JuneauMaritimeFestival.org, we have a schedule of events. We have that would be a great place to check everything out. It shows all the activities and exhibitors and the schedule of events. Like I said, we have entertainment up on stage. We've got some great bands lined up. We have Fire McGinnis, Hillbilly Honeys, and Josh Lockhart and his band, along with new this year, we have incorporated a maritime-themed fashion show called Heels to High Tide. So that also highlights some of our local businesses that get us ready and gear us up for our recreation and work out on the ocean.
Oh, that's great. And is there, I hate to say it, but I'm going to ask because people are going to want to know, is there a rain, a backup rain plan, or how does that going to work?
Well,
we're all going to hope for sun, of
course. Definitely kept that in mind. As you probably remember, last year we did have to move the festival due to weather. This will happen rain or shine. It's really just dependent on the wind was an issue last year. So even if it's a little drizzly, the festival will go on. But like we said, we're hoping for low wind. And I think, yeah, like you said, just need some great weather in the next 2 days.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we're Genoans. We can handle some rain. That's no
exactly.
problem. No problem at all. So this event is starting at 11 a.m. on Sunday, and it goes until what time?
Till 5 p.m.
Until 5 p.m. We've got activities for the kids. We've got activities for adults. And we've got the One Canoe Society doing the opening ceremony of it. Coming down in the canoes. It's very exciting. And, yeah, we're really looking forward to the event. Is there anything else that you wanted to let Juno know about?
Yeah, we're still looking for volunteers to help with setup and breakdown and just during the festival. We've also, those contests that I mentioned, we're still, and Fish Tote Race, some of the food contests, we're looking for participants. So if you visit our website there, JunoMaritimeFestival.org, there should be a way to find out how to get involved.
Great. And that, you know, that marinade contest, I've got to say, I've learned some fabulous tricks there. Some great stuff. Well, thank you so much, Alicia Chilton and Jesse Post, for coming here today to talk on Juno Afternoon to talk about the Maritime Festival. It's this Sunday. Please go check it out. So thanks so much for coming in the studio.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
And stick around here, and we're going to hear our Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 16th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of one of the first well-known female mathematicians born in Milan in 1718, Maria Gaetana Agnesi. Her father Pietro, a businessman, her mother, an aristocrat. The child was a brilliant little girl. By the age of 10, she spoke 5 languages. At the age of 9, she addressed a group of academics in Latin on the subject of women's rights and access to education. She wanted to enter a convent, but when her mother died, she had to take charge of the household and care for her many siblings. But she maintained her interest in math and philosophy. And in 1733, she published a collection of essays based on the talks that she had given to her father's circle of friends. And that same year, she began working on a math textbook, which grew into a larger work, and in which she wrote an equation for a specific bell-shaped curve that is still used today. The book Analytical Institutions, published 1748, highly regarded in academic circles for synthesizing complex mathematical ideas. It's the birthday of the writer, radio man, Louis Turkle, Studs Turkle, born in the Bronx in New York, 1912, family moved to Chicago when he was just 10 years old. His books included Division Street America, Hard Times, Working. Studs Turkle died in 2008 at the age of 96. He said, "I've always felt in all my books that there's a deep decency in the American people and a native intelligence providing they have the information." Here's a poem for today by Connie Wanick, entitled Walking Distance, for Stanley Dentinger, 1922 to 2004. Walking distance used to be much farther, miles and miles. Your grandfather, as a young man with a wife and new baby son, walked to and from his job, which was in the next town. That was Iowa, 1946, and it was not a hardship, but an opportunity. which is youth speaking, and also a particular man of German descent walking on good legs on white gravel roads, smoking cigarettes, which were cheap, though not free as they'd been during the war. Tobacco burned toward his fingers, but never reached them. The fire was small and personal, almost intimate, glowing bright when he put the cigarette to his lips and breathed through it. So many cigarettes before bombing runs, and none had been his last, a great surprise. Sometimes he passed a farmer burning field grass in the spring, the smoldering line advancing toward the fence. He had to know what he was doing so near the barn. You had to be close to see the way blades of dry grass passed the flame along at a truly individual level. Very close to see how delicious a meal the field was to the fire on a damp, calm, almost English morning, ideal for walking. A poem by Connie Wanick, Walking Distance, from On Speaking Terms, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering writing about finances, food, art, wine, and culture from around the world. More at wsj.com/celebrateweekend. Produced by Kathy Roach and Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Tonight on 360 North, it's Rain Country Reflections at 8, followed at 8:30 by the Alaska Film Archives television series, where we learn about ourselves through documentaries from our past. Then at 9, join Ann Sechrist and her guest on AARP Alaska. The Aviators follows at 9:30 with an FCC hearing on the future of the media at 10. That's all tonight on 360 North and 360north.org. Follow 360 North on Facebook and Twitter.
Set on the banks of a lake in St. Mary's, Ohio, the K of D tells the story of skinny 12-year-old Charlotte McGraw who discovers a powerful gift.
Join Perseverance Theater Company member and national TCG Fox Fellowship Award winner, artist Christina Apathy.
That's me!
And an all-local creative team as she brings a small town to life. 17 characters all told in a summertime ghost story.
This show runs May 10th through May 19th on the Phoenix second stage of Perseverance Theater. Evenings at 7:30 with Sunday matinees beginning at 4.
This message is brought to you by Chastity Piranha Creation Co. and Perseverance Theater.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us on this fine Thursday. And in the studio right now with me, I have Rob Mangold and Sue Alexander. And they're here today to talk to us about the Forest Service opening a new Juno laboratory. And they've got a ribbon-cutting ceremony that we're going to hear a lot more about. So thanks so much for joining us on Juno Afternoon.
It's great to be
Thank
here.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Rob, you're the director of the Pacific Northwest Laboratories. And can you tell us a little bit about what it means in Juneau to open up this new lab?
Well, we're delighted to be here, and the lab is a culmination of a long time hope and planning to have our own building here. Mm-hmm. And the building is a beautiful building on the shores of Auk Lake, and it's right on the edge of the University of Alaska campus.
Right.
And so we'll be sharing the building with those folks. And we won't be leasing or renting. We'll be in our own building. So it's sort of a nice culmination of what we've been trying to do for a long time.
Right. And so, Sue, you are actually, you know, the lab line, which I just learned. Which
lab
is great.
Line officer. Right.
You're the lab line officer here in Juneau. And so what does this mean actually for you? Because you're kind of here on the ground and running, and mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a long time in the making.
Oh, it's been great. Yeah. We've been, the research station has been trying to build a building here since probably the 60s,
oh, wow.
I imagine. And it's really exciting because we got... The lab is designed to really meet scientists' needs and to help us collaborate with our cooperators, which includes the University of Alaska system. And we have other parts of the Forest Service here, because there's more. The Forest Service has several branches, and so we have a couple of those different branches in the building. And we have a real state-of-the-art facility now that's going to be safe and going to be give the scientists a lot of opportunities to do real groundbreaking work. So we're just super excited to be in it. And we had a really nice, very enjoyable couple of years in the NOAA facility there right in Ock Bay.
Right.
And it's a beautiful building, but we were hoping to have this new state-of-the-art, and we've got it now, and it's just great.
That's great. So the ribbon cutting is actually this weekend. So it's the brand new Juno Laboratory for the Forest Service, Pacific Northwest Research Station. So, but people can actually take tours of this. Can you tell me what that's about?
Well, the building will be open from 12 to 3, and then and there'll be tours available. And then at 3, we'll have a formal dedication. And we'll have, it's very exciting, we're going to have the native Alaskan elders from the Tlingit tribe. They'll be there with ceremonial dance and song. And we're going to erect two house posts on the front of the building, which is going to be a very important event. And there'll be a couple of small short speeches from me and someone else, but the elders will speak, and we'll have refreshments, and we encourage everybody to come out and see this this beautiful building.
Yeah, that's great. And Sue, did you want to kind of tell us, you know, the importance of actually having, there's two house posts being raised and done by Wayne Price, who is a fabulous carver, and just what the importance of that, you know, that is for this particular establishment.
Yeah. Well, this building is on traditional Aquan land, and we wanted to have a way to express our respect for the Native Alaskans and our relationship. And this was sort of an organic process of deciding what kind of art would be incorporated. And so it was a joint decision with the elders and with the Forest Service representatives over time. And the suggestion initially was some other things, but we settled on these house posts. So one is a raven, one is eagle.
Great.
And they represent the two clans, shark and dog salmon. And those are going to be put up. Wayne's going to come out and help us, and he's got a bunch of people to help bring the poles in a very traditional way to have them put up. And then it's supposed to reflect, and it does reflect, our ongoing relationship with the community.
That's beautiful. And so as far as, you know, what you'll see at the open house, what kind of research actually happens in this establishment? And so what can people look for when, you know, when I give them some clues as to, okay, well, what area is this as they're going through the open house?
Well, we do a broad range of research there for forests. We do fish research, soils research, we do research on deer and climate change and thinning trees. And so it's a broad range of things that we research to provide information to the land managers so that they can make good decisions. At the lab itself, I'm not sure exactly. We've just moved in, and we can show them where we will be doing the work, and a lot of the work, of course, is out in the woods.
Right, so. Of course.
Yeah, we'll have one display of someone who's looking at how carbon is incorporated into soil. So there'll be a real brief little display someone can, while you're going on the tour. So we're going to have the tours on the half hour between 12 and 3. And so that'll be part of it. And then other things people can do is look into each lab and have an explanation about kind of what goes on in each part of the lab. So the building was designed to to bring in samples at one end, basically, and then slowly bring them through and do the different kinds of analysis, whether it's DNA or carbon or whatever it is, on these different samples they bring in. But there's biological research that goes on. We have soil scientists. We have social scientists. We have people who do things with, like, pests and disease. So there's quite a variety of different kinds of research that the scientists do in the lab.
Yeah, that's great. And so, and it's interesting that you said the design kind of incorporates kind of how it would go. And
mm-hmm.
and how did that process take place? And what was that, you know, process like? How many minds do you get in a room? I mentioned it's a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, the scientists themselves really thought a lot about collectively, you know, how they wanted the labs to be set up from a standpoint of not only just flow through the labs, but also an effort to share the space. And so all the different kinds of scientists tried to set these labs up so that it's not like this is my lab, this is your lab,
mm-hmm.
but instead these are shared spaces and we each can work on our respective issues in each of the different labs and be able to bring in instruments that we can share with the university and with other collaborators. For example, you know, if you have a $40,000 piece of equipment, it's kind of silly to have one for each organization in town.
Right.
You know, so it's just a really great opportunity to have designed this lab around making sure it's safe, making sure that it lasts a long time, given maybe that you're using some kind of caustic chemicals. You want to be safe and you want your lab materials to be durable, and to have the space designed so that it's conducive to people working collaboratively and efficiency in terms of leaving your dirt kind of in one spot and having it get a little cleaner as you work through.
That's a great. And, you know, reading the press release and kind of talking, you know, earlier is that there's some really green features of this new building. It's a new building. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I have to say that as Juno starts to build new buildings, which is happening now, that this, you know, building green is actually really important. So can you talk a little bit about what the features are?
Well, one of the main features is a geothermal heating system. So we're pleased about that. It's going to lower our costs in the long run. We also have triple pane windows, and there are a lot of windows in the lab if you go out with a beautiful view of the lake, but they're energy efficient. And, of course, the native wood that we've used, there's yellow cedar on the siding, and beautiful wood beams everywhere, constructed with local labor for the most part. And so it's a very energy efficient building, and it's a very nice, inspiring place to work.
That's great. And so where exactly is it? So when people go out on Saturday for this, you know, you can take a tour
mm-hmm.
starting at noon. You
mm-hmm.
can come to the official ceremony, the ribbon cutting, and at 3. And where is it exactly?
Well, we've come in from the back loop and come into the UAS entrance from the back loop.
Okay.
And we're going to have our parking lot is actually the first one on the left, but we're going to have that blocked off because our ceremony is taking place in our parking lot. It's not a very big parking lot. And so people can continue on around and go ahead and park in UAS parking and then just walk right past the library and just keep going on that pathway just a few hundred yards, and our building's just right down there on the right. So just go ahead and park at UAS and then come around and in our parking lot and get ready, and we'll have a tent set up and we'll have chairs. And we'll be ready to welcome people.
And rain or shine.
Come rain or shine, that's right. So for the tours, again, you know, you need to park at UAS and then walk over. And if you have some kind of a disability, you can't walk, then just you can be dropped off and then just have maybe someone drive your car around and then come back and pick you up.
Great. And this is a fabulous opportunity for the community to see and to learn, actually, a little bit more about the Forest Service, the research they do here. And it's really important to keeping our forests healthy and to making sure that we actually, you know, have the proper tools. So
mm-hmm.
it's very exciting this is happening. Is there anything else you want to tell Juno about the ribbon cutting and the ceremonies this weekend?
We're really looking forward to it, and we're really looking forward to having the community participate. And very much appreciate the involvement and support of the Native community and the elders.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Rob Mangold and Sue Alexander here, and talking about the Forest Service dedication of their new Juno Laboratory, laboratory this Saturday. And the tour starting at noon, and you can go to the ceremony, the official ribbon-cutting ceremony at 3 p.m. So I advise you to check that out on Saturday, rain or shine. Thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Treat yourself this June to the finest in classical music at the Sitka Summer Music Festival. Artistic director Zuhl Bailey is joined by pianist Nava Perlman, violinist Gil Morgenstern, guitarist David Leisner, the Rubens Quartet, and many more to electrify your summer with exquisite weekend concerts against the beautiful backdrop of Sitka Sound. Convenient ferry sailings from Juneau complete a relaxing weekend excursion. Visit sitkamusicfestival.org for detailed information.
And thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. And in the studio with me, the fabulous and lovely Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Well, you know, we're keeping up, sort of. So, another wild weekend. You know, May is just a month of festivals.
It is.
There is to it.
It's true.
This one and that one and everyone.
And, you know, I'm feeling pretty festive, too.
Are you?
So, yeah.
Yep. Okay, good. Yeah. So tonight there's Mendelssohn out at Chapel by the Lake, and there's only two tickets for that left.
Ooh, jump
so
on that.
So call right away if you want to. I know it's pews, so we'll get everybody in.
Right.
I just should mention that, and mentioning that, the Grace Kelly Quintet is down to 55. So,
who I just played.
Yeah.
So good. So good.
I just had a call from some folks who were just in Washington, D.C., where she will be performing after this, and people in Washington, D.C. are going crazy. So you guys are going to get to see her here.
So cool.
Yeah. Anyway, let's see. We have, yeah, as we mentioned, lots of stuff. This is the last weekend to see KFD, an urban legend, over at Perseverance in the Phoenix stage, and it's getting rave reviews. So try to, and Art pointed out to me that if you need to on Sunday, you could see that in the afternoon and then go directly into The Road Weeps and The Well Runs Dry.
Wow, you could be very busy.
A double feature. So, yeah, we've got that, Perseverance, The Road Weeps, and The Well Runs Dry running all weekend, and then K of D, an urban legend. And let's see, on Friday, there's Coast Guard Remembers Juno. It's a walk, run, bike to honor the fallen men and women of the Coast Guard. You meet over at Sandy Beach at 10 o'clock. There's at 5 p.m. a spaghetti and art fundraiser for Jan Niemeyer, who most people know, and she's fighting with cancer, and so it's a little fundraiser to help her out. And as I mentioned, that's the Grace Kelly Quintet on Friday evening. On Saturday morning, bright and early, you can go, actually it's not that dang early, but 11 a.m. to 4 p.m.
That's
out
my perfect
on campus.
Time.
Yeah, just about right. You could do one of two things. You could come out for Community Day on campus, which is music and food and face painting and all sorts of things. The tours of the new Forest Service Lab, all that stuff are going. Or you could go to the Baranoff and have beer brunch.
You could have beer brunch. I'm sorry. I'm a one-track mind. I'm sorry, Nancy. So is that?
Yes. It starts the fabulous beer week that we're having.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Kathy's Beer Week.
Yeah. So you could do that. You could probably do both, actually.
Actually, you could probably do both. And I, you know,
to drive.
Hopefully, you live
together.
Downtown, and
yes.
You know, and hit the valley first.
Yeah. Also, from 11 to 4 is the Family Farm Day, which is at Swampy Acres. So just before you get to the campus, you can go ride ponies and stuff like that.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, that's always fun. At 1 o'clock, the artists behind The Road Weeps and The Well Runs Dry, Marcus Gardley and Nikisa Etemond, they will be at the downtown library. You can meet him and talk about the play, which is very interesting. At 2 p.m., there's a wildlife cruise with Alan Marine, which benefits the hospital foundation that leaves from Stater Harbor. At 2:30, you could put your boots on, and I think it is going to rain, I'm sad to say. But we will ignore it.
Okay. Let's ignore it.
You need it anyway because we're going to be setting the Guinness World Record for the world's largest rain boot race. So you meet at the library, apparently.
Cool.
Okay. Housing First is celebrating its 20th year anniversary, and they're having an event at Northern Light United Church at 4 p.m. There's a Juno Dance Unlimited May recital. This is at Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium, and it is Saturday at 7 and Sunday at 2. And the finale of the festival, Booker T. Jones.
I just talked to him.
Oh, man.
You know what? I got to say, he's just, he's a legend. You got to see the legend.
You got to see the legend. And a lot of people were sort of like dubious. Is this the real Booker T.? You know, like, come on. This is a guy.
Yeah,
it's a guy.
It's a real one.
Yeah.
And, so, yeah, he's got a new album out coming in June. So we talked about his new album, and he's going to play tracks from that, but he's going to play old stuff. He's going to play other people's stuff. It's what an amazing grand finale to the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival.
Yes, I'm excited. I'm sure that, they're already gearing up for the next one, but let's not talk about that. Okay, Sunday, you've already talked about the Maritime Festival. There's tons of stuff going on, the Native Artists Market, the Maritime Festival, all sorts of stuff. There's also another cruise, the Orca Annual Wildlife Cruise, which also leaves from the Allen Marine Dock out the road at 1 o'clock. At 4 p.m., the Fairbanks 5 Recital and Riffs in Three Acts. That's at Northern Light, and it's free. It's the last performance of the K of D at 4 o'clock also. 7 p.m., Celebration Ringers Handbell Concert over at Resurrection Lutheran Church. They're accepting donations for that performance. We're having the Arts Roundtable on Monday, this Monday, because the last Monday is a holiday.
Right.
So that we will meet at 12:15, and it's sort of a nice way to get your foot in the door with some of the arts groups and learn about what's going on. We have some issues we're talking about, sort of economic development type things. So come on down and join us. It's a brown bag lunch. Tuesday, let's see, there's a historic walking tour that the museum puts on, the City Museum. It's on Wednesday is the deadline to apply for the Juneau Symphony Youth Solo Competitions, which will be held on June 5th.
Always a treat.
They are. And let's see, there's the Juneau Coaching Boys and Demand Coaches Clinic Leadership Program. That's at 5:30 on Wednesday. And on Thursday at 6 in the evening, you could go to the library and view a TEDx viewing and discussion of TED Talks on happiness.
Oh, really? I love TED Talks. I'm a little bit addicted on YouTube.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, totally.
No, there's kind of, well, and on happiness. And Thursday is the next of the beer things. So we'll talk to you next week, probably at length, about the beer festivals.
Wow. So you can finish up the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival this weekend. You can hit Grace Kelly. You can also go out to the university, and you can check out the fabulous events out there on Saturday. It's just a lot going on, as usual.
We have a lot going on. We have, and I want to get people who are interested in performing. We are getting set up with the airport. I think I mentioned this before, Music on the Fly. I'm looking for performers. So if you're interested in performing out at the airport, Sundays, 6:30 to 7:30 in the evening, give me a call.
That's very cool. And you can always give Nancy a call at 586-ARTS, that's 2787, or check her out on jahc.org.
Yeah. So thanks.
Thank you, Nancy. Always a pleasure. And we'll hear more from Nancy DeJourney next week on Arts Up. And thanks so much for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. I wanted to give you a little bit information about what's happening tomorrow on Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore hosts, and he'll talk with Lucy Merrill about this Sunday's concert with the Celebration Ringers, and that's the bell ringing that Nancy was just talking about. And we'll talk to John Weber about this weekend's Rain Gear Roundup, which is really great because kids need some rain gear. And we'll get the upcoming details about the fourth annual Authors at Sea Whale Watching Cruise with Susan Hickey from Hearthside Books. And finally, like Nancy said, it's Family Farm Day at Swampy Acres, and we'll hear from Rhonda Gardnier from the Juneau Co-op Preschool Writer's Almanac and more, and on Juneau Afternoon tomorrow afternoon. And this is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to 103.1 in Lemon and Switzer Creek at 101.7. Gustavus listens on 88.1. We serve Hoonah at 91.9 in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. Hear KTOO on 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. And KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872. And KXL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. And thanks so much again for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. I'd like to thank our fabulous guests, Booker T. Jones, who you can check out on Saturday night, the grand finale of the Juneau Jazz and Classics concert, Jesse Post and Alicia Chilton with the Maritime Festival, and get more information about the Forestry Science Lab ribbon cutting this Saturday, and, of course, Nancy DeCherney. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
calling on Congress to work with us to support and fully fund our budget request to improve the security of our embassies around the world.
President Obama on embassy security, the IRS, and plugging leaks.
It's Thursday, May 13th, and this is All Things Considered.
I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Also this hour, what's in those emails released by the White House from the days after the Benghazi attack?
And a large jury verdict in favor of vulnerable workers.
In this case, intellectually disabled men who suffered severe abuse at a turkey processing plant.
It's a wake-up call. And hopefully, we don't ever in the future have to ask the question, how could this go on for so long and nobody notice?
Also, soccer great David Beckham announces he's retiring.
More than anything, David Beckham is one of the best free kick takers of all time.
Beck bows out.
First News.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. President Obama at a meeting with Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel and other military leaders at the White House says more needs to be done to stamp out the problem of sexual assault against women soldiers. The meeting comes with two cases in as many weeks in which military personnel whose job it was to prevent such assaults have themselves been charged with sex crimes. The president says it's a situation that can't continue.
Not only is it a crime, not only is it shameful and disgraceful, but it also is going to make and has made our military less effective than it can be.
That was echoed by Army General Martin Dempsey, who said, "We're losing the confidence of the women who serve. We can solve this problem." Pentagon report finds complaints up 37% in 2012 from the previous year, while it noted most sexual assault cases remain unreported. The House has passed a repeal of the president's health care law with Republican votes alone. As NPR's Tamara Keith reports, it marks the third vote by House Republicans for a full repeal of the law.
In total, there